Rahula, the Buddha's father, King Suddhodana, was afraid that his son, the prince, would leave the home life. When the prince was still quite young, his father told him to marry, and he wed Yashodhara. When he was 19, he left home, and as he was about to go, his wife told him she wanted a son. The prince thereupon pointed his finger at her, and she became pregnant. Then he left for the snow mountains to meditate for 6 years. And for 6 years, Rahula, his son, lay in his mother's womb. Rahula means obstacle. He had plugged up a mouse hole for 6 days in a past life, and so received 6 years of retribution, suffering in the womb. When he was finally born, he caused a lot of trouble for his mother. King Suddhodana and the whole family were upset. "Well, I never," they said. "Without a husband, she gives birth to a son. Yashodhara has obviously been running around. She must have a boyfriend." "She's a bad woman," pronounced the entire clan. One servant spoke in her defense. "You're wrong," she said. "She's pure. She stays home all day long and doesn't flirt with men. The child really is the prince's." No one believed the servant, and they wanted to kill Yashodhara, to beat her to death. Finally, they dug a pit, built a fire in it, and prepared to throw Yashodhara and her baby in. Yashodhara stepped forward and made a vow. "Heaven spirits, earth spirits, bear witness. If the child belongs to the prince, my son and I will not be burned. If I did transgress, we both will burn." Then she jumped into the pit. What do you think happened? The pit turned into a pool of water, and a golden lotus grew out of it to catch them. Everyone then knew that the child was truly the son of the Buddha. When the Buddha returned to the palace, Yashodhara took Rahula to meet him. If the child had been illegitimate, she certainly would have feared the Buddha. But she sent the child out to meet him, and the Buddha hugged the child. Rahula sought the true way and worked hard. Among the great disciples, he was foremost in secret practices. He worked everywhere, at all times, but no one knew he was working because he never advertised his cultivation. His work was so secret that he could enter samadhi any place at all, even on the toilet, and no one knew. Although Rahula was the Buddha's son, the Buddha doesn't have only one son. He has three kinds of sons. 1. True sons. One often reads in the sutras, "Headed by the Dharma prince Manjushri." The Buddha is the Dharma king, and the Bodhisattvas are the Buddha's genuine sons. 2. Initiate sons. These are the arhats who, out of ignorance, hold to the principle of one-sided emptiness and have not attained the principle of the middle way. 3. Uninitiate sons. Common men who do not know how to cultivate are upside down, but they are still the Buddha's sons, for the Buddha is the great compassionate father of all living beings. The wonderful Dharma Lotus Blossom Sutra speaks of us as poor, lost sons. We should quickly return to our great compassionate Father. We all have a share in the Buddha's family. Gavampati. This venerable one's very strange name means cow cud. Far in the distant past, he had insulted a bhikshu who couldn't eat hard things and had to slurp his food because his teeth were not good. "You eat like a cow," said Gavampati. The old bhikshu happened to be a Pratika Buddha, and because of Gavampati's careless slander, Gavampati was reborn for 500 lifetimes as a cow and got to know the real bitterness that it involved. Finally, he met Shakyamuni Buddha, learned to cultivate, and attained arhatship. Although he had certified to the fruit, his habits from so many lives remained unchanged, and all day he snorted like a cow chewing its cud. Shakyamuni Buddha was afraid that someone might slander him and reap the same reward, and so he sent Venerable Gavampati to the heavens to live. There he became the foremost of those who received the offerings of the gods. We should take care not to speak rashly or to scold others. If you berate others, others will berate you. Pindola Bharadvaja. Pindola Bharadvaja means unmoving, sharp roots. To the present day, he has not entered nirvana because he broke a rule. Although the arhats around the Buddha had spiritual powers, they were not allowed to display them casually. Once, an elder called Jayotiska carved a bowl out of sandalwood, put it on top of a high pole, and said, "Whoever can use his spiritual powers to get the bowl down can have it." Pindola Bharadvaja couldn't resist the temptation and used his powers to get the bowl down. "Since you're so greedy for sandalwood bowls that you display your spiritual powers," said the Buddha, "you will not be allowed to enter nirvana. Instead, you must stay here and be a field of blessedness for living beings." Pindola Bharadvaja is still in the world, but no one knows where. Whenever people make offerings to the Triple Jewel, however, he comes to receive them, acting as a field of blessedness for beings in the Dharma-ending age. Kalodayan. Kalodayan means black light. His skin was black, but his body glowed, and his eyes emitted light. One night, as he was out walking, a pregnant woman was so startled to see his two bright eyes and black-lit body that she had a miscarriage and died. Because of this, the Buddha set up a precept forbidding shramanas to take walks at night. Black light served the Buddha as an attendant and a Dharma protector. He was the foremost teacher who taught and transformed the greatest number of people, creating over 1,000 certified sages. Mahakapina. Maha means great, and Kapina means constellation. His father and mother prayed to one of the 28 constellations in order to have their son. He was foremost in the knowledge of astrology. Vakula. Vakula means good bearing. He was extremely handsome. In the past, during the time of Vipassana Buddha, he made offerings of the Indian Haritaki fruit to a Pratyeka Buddha, a sage enlightened by conditions. Because of this, he received the retribution of long life in every life for 91 eons. Foremost of the disciples in age, he lived to be 160. In past lives, Vakula kept the precept against killing so conscientiously that he never killed a single creature, not even grass or trees. Thus he obtained 5 kinds of death-free retribution. Vakula was a strange child. He was not born crying like most children, but entered the world smiling. Not only was he smiling, he was sitting upright in full lotus. Seeing this, his mother exclaimed, "He's a monster!" and threw him on the brazier to burn. After 3 or 4 hours, he hadn't burned. He just sat there in full lotus laughing. Fully convinced that he was a monster, she then tried to boil him. When she took the cover off the pot several hours later, he just smiled back at her. "Oh, no!" she cried and threw him into the ocean. He did not drown, however, because a big fish swam up and swallowed him whole. Then a man netted the fish and cut it open. Vakula stepped out, unharmed by the knife. So the fire didn't burn him, the water didn't boil him, the ocean didn't drown him, and the fish didn't chomp him to death, and the fisherman's knife didn't cut him. Because he kept the precept against killing in every life, he obtained these 5 kinds of death-free retribution. Aniruddha. Aniruddha means not poor. Long ago, during the time of Pushya Buddha, a famine starved the people and reduced them to eating grass, roots, and leaves. It was the practice of a Pratika Buddha who lived at the time to go out begging only once every 2 weeks. If he received no offerings, he simply didn't eat. One day he went down the mountain to beg, and having received no offerings, was returning with his empty bowl when he was seen by a poor farmer, Aniruddha. The poor farmer addressed the Pratika Buddha most respectfully. "Holy Master," he said, "you receive no offerings. Won't you please accept my lunch? As I am very poor, I can only offer you this cheap grain of rice, but if you want it, you can have it." Seeing his sincerity, the Pratika Buddha accepted. After eating, he ascended into empty space, manifested the 18 miraculous changes, and left. Just then the poor farmer saw a rabbit running towards him. The rabbit jumped on his back, and no matter how the farmer tried to knock, brush, or shake it off, it wouldn't budge. All alone in the field and terrified, he ran home. When he got there, the rabbit had turned into a gold statue. He asked his wife to knock the rabbit off, but she couldn't move it either. When they broke a gold leg off the rabbit, another would grow back in its place. In this way, the gold statue was never exhausted, and for 91 kalpas, Aniruddha was not poor. During the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, he was the son of the Buddha's father's brother, the Red Rice King. He was the Buddha's first cousin. Although he wasn't poor, Aniruddha liked to sleep when the Buddha lectured on the sutras. One day the Buddha scolded him. "Hey, hey, how can you sleep like an oyster or a clam? Sleep, sleep for 1,000 years, but you'll never hear the Buddha's name." Hearing this, Aniruddha became extremely vigorous and didn't sleep for 7 days. As a consequence, he went blind. The Buddha took pity on him and taught him how to cultivate the Vajra illuminating bright samadhi. He immediately obtained the penetration of the heavenly eye. He could see the great trichilial cosm as clearly as seeing an apple held in his hand, and was foremost of the disciples in possessing the heavenly eye. Sutra. Together with all the bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, Dharma Prince Manjushri, Ajita Bodhisattva, Gandhastian Bodhisattva, Nityogdukta Bodhisattva, and others such as these, all great bodhisattvas, and together with Chakra, chief among gods, and the numberless great multitudes from all the heavens. Commentary. Not only were the 16 venerable arhats present in the assembly, but there were also all the bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, the great bodhisattvas. What is a bodhisattva? Bodhisattva is a Sanskrit word. Bodhi means enlightenment, and sattva means being. The word means to enlighten those with sentience, that is, to cause living beings to wake up. Bodhisattva also means enlightened among beings, because bodhisattvas themselves are awake. Enlightenment is simply the opposite of confusion. Confusion is simply non-enlightenment. With one enlightened thought, you are a Buddha. With one confused thought, you are a living being. With every thought enlightened, in every thought you are a Buddha. With every thought confused, in every thought you are a living being. Bodhisattvas are beings who can wake themselves up. Every day they are more enlightened, not more confused. Bodhisattvas are enlightened beings, and living beings are confused beings. Enlightened beings are those who are enlightened among all the confused living beings. In all situations they are awake, and so it is said, if you see affairs and are awake, you can transcend the world. If you see affairs and are confused, you fall beneath the wheel. Bodhisattvas transcend the world. Living beings fall beneath the grinding wheel of sense objects. The difference between bodhisattvas and living beings is that of enlightenment and confusion. We say, enlightened, you're a Buddha. Enlightened, too, you are a bodhisattva. Confused, you're a living being. Manjushri. Manjushri, also Sanskrit, means wonderfully lucky or wonderful virtue. Of the bodhisattvas, he is foremost in wisdom and is also known as the great and wise Manjushri. When the bodhisattva Manjushri was born, 10 auspicious signs manifested to indicate that his merit and virtue were complete and his wisdom foremost. 1. The room was filled with bright light. When Manjushri was born, a bright light filled the room. It was not the light of the sun, moon, stars, or lamps. It represented Manjushri's great prajna wisdom and great intelligence, which can disperse all darkness. 2. The vessels were filled with sweet dew. Sweet dew is the heavenly medicine of immortality, which nourishes you and satisfies your hunger so that you don't need to eat. Sweet dew satisfies, purifies, and refreshes. Hungry ghosts who have sweet dew poured over their heads immediately get rid of their offense karma and obtain a good rebirth. This is called opening the sweet dew door. When it opens, the hungry ghosts run in and obtain their fill. Sweet dew filling the vessels represents Manjushri's use of the sweet dew of Dharma to rescue living beings. 3. The seven jewels came forth from the earth. When Manjushri was born, gold, silver, lapis lazuli, crystal, mother of pearl, red pearls, and carnelian came forth from the earth. Why are they called jewels? Because they are rare. Whatever is scarce is precious. Earth, for example, is actually very precious. Without it, we couldn't sustain our lives, and yet no one thinks of it as special because there is a lot of it. If you try to give people a handful of dirt, they wouldn't want it. They'd just throw it away. Water, too, is essential for life, but no one prizes it because it's everywhere. All living things depend on water for survival. Therefore, Lao Tzu said, "The highest goodness, like water, benefits all things, and yet does not contend. It goes to places men despise, and so it is close to the way." Water benefits all things but doesn't struggle. It would never say, "Hey, flower, fortunately for you, there is me, water, and so you have grown so big and bloomed so beautifully. Without me, flower, would this day have come for you? You really should be grateful." It doesn't think in this way, and it doesn't wrangle. Travelers will notice that water gathers in the lowlands in places where men do not like to go. It lives where no one else wants to live, and so it is close in its nature to the way. Water, fire, metal, and earth benefit all things, but because of their abundance, no one considers them precious. Trees are everywhere, and so no one values them. But gold is a treasure because it is rare. In the land of ultimate bliss, where the ground is made of gold, dirt would be valuable. If you gave a clod of Saha dirt to someone in the land of ultimate bliss, it would be as precious as those rocks they are now bringing back from the moon. They are just rocks, but because they came from the moon, they are very valuable. If you sent a worthless clod of dirt to the land of ultimate bliss, everyone would exclaim, "Rare indeed." So the seven precious gems are called jewels because they are hard to find. Manjushri Bodhisattva had limitless treasuries of jewels. When he was born, the seven jewels welled up from the earth, endless for the taking and inexhaustible in their use. "Where are these treasuries?" you ask. "They are in the place where Manjushri was born. Can I go there?" "Don't be so greedy. The travel expenses would cost more than the jewels you'd bring back, so don't have this false thought." 4. The gods open the treasuries. Wheel-turning sage kings have seven treasures: a gold disc, white elephants, jade women, horse, pearls, ministers of the army, and gods to guard his treasuries. These treasuries were buried in the earth long ago and then forgotten. But when Manjushri was born, the guardian gods opened the treasuries so that the jewels could be obtained. 5. Chickens gave birth to phoenixes. Chickens usually give birth to chickens, but when Manjushri was born, they gave birth to phoenixes. Phoenixes are auspicious birds, and seeing one is a lucky sign. In the Analects, Confucius wrote, "The phoenix hasn't come, and the river sends no map. I am finished." The phoenix appears when there is a wise man ruling and things are set right in the world, as during the time of Emperor Shun, 2255 BC. When these birds were commonly seen. During the time of Fuxi, 2852 BC, a turtle rose up out of a river with a chart on its back. The chart gave Fuxi the idea for the 8 trigrams, which combined to make the 64 hexagrams of the I Ching, the Book of Changes. But now, said Confucius, one no longer sees such auspicious signs. Thus I know that it's all over. To expound the way and its virtue is of no use. 6. Pigs gave birth to dragons. Dragons ordinarily give birth to dragons, and phoenixes ordinarily give birth to phoenixes. It's not too strange for chickens to hatch phoenixes, but then pigs gave birth to dragons. Dragon pigs with scales. 7. Horses gave birth to unicorns. Horses usually beget horses, but they had unicorns. Unicorns, lions, and tigers are all called the kings of beasts. The unicorn is also an auspicious animal. In China, during the time of the benevolent emperor Tang Di Yao, 2356 BC, there were many phoenixes and unicorns, and they were often seen. Later, when people's karmic retribution grew too heavy, these auspicious creatures no longer appeared. Confucius wrote, in the time of Emperor Tang Yao, the unicorn and phoenix abounded. That time, however, is not the present, so what have you come to seek? Unicorn, unicorn, how my heart grieves. During the time of Emperor Tang Yao, unicorns and phoenixes often came into the world to roam around. Everyone saw them. But that time is not now, so what have you come to seek? He said. When the sage Confucius was born, a unicorn appeared. When his mother saw it, she tied a string around its neck. During the end of Confucius' life, some hunters killed a unicorn. When Confucius saw it, he noticed that it had the string around its neck. It was the same unicorn. Seeing this sign, he sighed deeply, for he knew that it would not be long before he died. Unicorn, unicorn, how my heart grieves, he said. When Manjushri was born, horses gave birth to unicorns. 8. Cows gave birth to white zai. The white zai is an extremely rare and auspicious animal. It's not like an ox, and it's not like a horse. It's not like a deer or a mule. It's not like anything at all. It looks like a horse but has the hooves of an ox. 9. The grains in the granaries turn to gold. What use is golden grain? Can you eat it? You can exchange it for money and buy a lot of grain, you may say. I agree. A grain of gold is very valuable. 10. Elephants with 6 tusks appeared. Elephants usually have only 2 tusks, but when Manjushri was born, they had 6. These are the 10 auspicious signs which appeared at Manjushri's birth. They represent the 10 paramitas. Giving, morality, patience, vigor, concentration, wisdom, skill and means, vows, determination, and knowledge. They show that Manjushri is not like other bodhisattvas. If you would like to meet Manjushri Bodhisattva, you must first remember these 10 signs. Then, when you see him, you will know. This is my old friend and closest good-knowing advisor. Manjushri will be very pleased. Yes, you are my old friend, my very good friend, he will say. Although he doesn't discriminate, if you don't know him, he won't approach you. The better you know him, the closer he comes. Therefore, we should know the states of the bodhisattvas so that we can be their brothers and friends. All the bodhisattvas are our good-knowing advisors, and in the future we will be bodhisattvas too, so don't take yourself lightly. Ajita. Ajita is Sanskrit for invincible. Ajita Bodhisattva is none other than Maitreya, compassionate clan, Bodhisattva. He specializes in cultivating the compassionate heart samadhi and is compassionate toward all living beings. Scolded, beaten, cheated, insulted, no matter how badly he is treated, he is compassionate in return. No matter how obnoxious living beings are, he protects them all even more lovingly than he would protect his own sons or daughters. His compassion and loving concern are limitless and boundless. In order to cultivate the compassionate heart samadhi, you must first practice patience. And so Ajita Bodhisattva wrote this verse. The old fool wrapped in ragged clothes, his belly filled with gruel, he mends old sacks to keep him warm and lives on chance, old fool. A scolding makes the fool smile sweetly, while a beating makes him sleepy. Spit on his face, he lets it dry and saves his strength and energy. His calm, a piece past ridicule, gets him the jewel within the wonderful. Now that you've heard this song today, why worry about not perfecting the way? The song is about a stupid old man who wears a patched robe and eats his food plain, without soy sauce, hot sauce, or sesame oil. It doesn't taste like much, but it fills his stomach. He mends his robes to stay warm, and whatever happens, just happens. Something happens, and he reflects it. When it passes, he is still. Everywhere, according with conditions, as the years and months go by, minding your own business as the time passes. When it happens, it happens. When it's over, it's gone. He accords with conditions and does not change. Does not change and yet accords with conditions. For him, in movement there is stillness. In stillness, movement. Both movement and stillness are still and moving. But we won't speak about it too deeply. If we did, it would be difficult to understand. Scolded, the old fool says, "Great!" If someone hits him, he falls asleep. Now, isn't that stupid? If ordinary people were hit, they would glare and shout, "Why did you hit me?" But the old fool just falls asleep. Isn't this wonderful? If you can master this, you're doing pretty well. You have truly gained some genuine cultivation. Spit in my face, says the stupid old man, and I just let it dry. If you spit in someone else's face, the fire of ignorance would blaze 30,000 feet into the air. How can you insult me like that? He'd say, but the old man doesn't even wipe it off. He just lets it dry. Although it's not much effort to wipe it away, he still saves his strength and gives others no affliction. This is paramita. If you can sleep when people hit you and let their spit dry on your face, this is kshati paramita, the perfection of patience. If you don't understand this, what Buddha Dharma do you study? You study day in and day out, but when this happens, you don't know what Dharma it is. If someone hit you to test your skill, you'd probably end up saying, I've studied the Buddha Dharma for so long, why can't I use it when the time comes? The paramita is the wonderful within the wonderful, the jewel within the jewel. If you've heard this news, how can you worry about not perfecting the way? The Buddhas and Bodhisattvas would never deceive you. This then is what Ajita Bodhisattva had to say about the perfection of patience. And if we practice accordingly, we shall certainly realize the way. Ganhastin and Nityodukta. Ganhastin is a Sanskrit word which is interpreted as never resting. Nityodukta, also Sanskrit, means ever vigorous. Ever vigorous and never resting competed with each other. One was vigorous and the other never rested. One never rested and the other was vigorous. They watched each other. If you don't rest, said one, then I'll be constantly vigorous. If you're ever vigorous, replied the other, then I won't rest. In the six periods of the day and night, they practiced the way, each acting as the other's Dharma protector. They raced every step of the way, and neither would let himself fall behind. Thus, Ganhastin is just Nityodukta. Ever vigorous is just never resting. These two have cultivated together as Dharma friends for limitless kalpas. If you work hard, I'll work harder. If you increase your efforts, I'll double mine. They were genuine cultivators, ever vigorous and never resting, Nityodutka and Ganhastin. And together with Chakra, chief among gods. Chakra, or Sakro Devanam Indra, is the ruler of the Triastrimsha heaven, the heaven of the 33. He is referred to in the Sharangama mantra as Yintolaya. Those who understand the Buddha Dharma know that all gods, ghosts, and spirit kings, as well as all the great bodhisattvas, are contained within the Sharangama mantra. Those who do not understand the Buddha Dharma say, Buddhism does not include the heavens, the 28 constellations. They say this because they don't understand that the heavens and the constellations, everything is within the Sharangama mantra. Chakra is Sanskrit. It means the able heavenly ruler, and the numberless great multitudes from all the heavens. Numberless, the heavens cannot be counted. In general, there are 33, but if you were to describe them in detail, you would speak of the limitless heavens within each heaven. Just as there are also limitless worlds within each world, and limitless countries within each country. Thus, many heavenly beings were present in the assembly. Sutra. At that time, the Buddha told the elder Shariputra, passing from here through hundreds of thousands of millions of Buddha lands to the west, there is a world called Ultimate Bliss. In this land, a Buddha called Amitabha right now teaches the Dharma. Commentary. At that time refers to the time when all the gods, bodhisattvas, Shravakas, bhikshus, bhikshunis, upasakas and upasikas had gathered together to listen to Shakyamuni Buddha. The Buddha spoke to the wise elder Shariputra, saying, "If you travel westward from here, from the pure abode in the Jeti Grove to the garden of the benefactor of orphans and the solitary, Shravasti, India, and go through hundreds of thousands of millions of Buddha lands, you will find a world system called the Land of Ultimate Bliss. This is the happiest land there is. Nothing surpasses the happiness there. It is ultimate. In this land, there is a Buddha. His name is Amitabha, limitless light. He is also called Amitayas, limitless life. His light is measureless, illumining the lands of the 10 directions everywhere without obstruction. And his lifespan extends for hundreds of thousands of tens of thousands of millions of great kalpas without end." After realizing Buddhahood, this Buddha did not rest, but right now he speaks the Dharma. He is not an unemployed Buddha. Teaching the Dharma is the Buddha's job. Whoever teaches the Dharma does the Buddha's work. Whoever doesn't does the demon's work. So it is said, "Unless I teach the Dharma to save living beings, I will have passed through my entire life in vain." If you don't teach the Dharma and convert living beings, you will have wasted your life and obtained no benefit. Sutra. Shariputra, for what reason is this land called ultimate bliss? Commentary. "Shariputra," said the Buddha, "why is this land called ultimate bliss?" Although he had great wisdom, Shariputra didn't know enough to ask this question, and so the Buddha asked it himself. "This is like yesterday when I asked you if you had any questions and you didn't answer because you didn't know what to ask. So I said, 'Very well, I have a question for you. Do you like the rain?' Thieves hate the rain. Why? If they go out to steal, they get all wet. 'I want to steal something,' they say, 'but it is raining. I will have to carry an umbrella. How inconvenient.' Travelers say, 'I came here for a vacation and I haven't seen a thing. Detestable rain.' Travelers and thieves don't care for the rain. But the farmer says, 'Rain! My flowers will sell for thousands of dollars. Isn't this fine?' The fruit growers say, 'The rain will make my apples big, fat, and sweet. My oranges, too.' Now, would you say that lecturing sutras and speaking about the Dharma is a good thing or not? Those who believe in the Buddha Dharma say it is good, but those who are jealous of it say it is not. Why is this land called ultimate bliss?" Basically, Shariputra should have asked this question, but he didn't, and so Shakyamuni Buddha said, "Shariputra, why is Amitabha's country called ultimate bliss? Speak up." The Buddha waited about 5 minutes. Shariputra said nothing. Such great wisdom, and yet he didn't know what to say. He just stared blankly, as you do when I ask you a question. But time is precious. Shakyamuni Buddha waited until he could wait no more. "All right," he said, "I will answer it myself." Sutra. All living beings of this country endure none of the sufferings, but enjoy every bliss. Therefore, it is called ultimate bliss. Commentary. In Amitabha Buddha's land, living beings are born by transformation from lotus flowers. Their birth is pure, not one of desire and emotions, and so their bodies are pure and are not the result of sexual desire and the lustful thoughts of men and women. This is why they endure none of the sufferings but enjoy every bliss. Why do we suffer? We suffer because our bodies are created from unclean substances of the father's semen and the mother's blood. We continually think of unclean things. Men usually think of women. Women of men. People eat their fill, and since there's nothing else to do, sexual desire is foremost. When the time comes, men and women want to marry. If they don't, they feel as if they have a great illness which has not been cured. Because the basis, the seed, is impure, the thoughts are impure, and those impure thoughts bring about all kinds of sufferings. Why is there suffering? For no other reason than this. Sutras are lectured, and Dharma is taught only to teach you one thing. Have no unclean, impure thoughts. Have no sexual desire. Without sexual desire, you are one of the clear, pure, ocean-wide assembly of bodhisattvas. With sexual desire, you are a ghostly living beings of the five turbid realms. Cultivation and non-cultivation are right here. If you can purify your mind, your merit and virtue are boundless. If you cannot purify your mind, your offenses are limitless. Offenses are created from impure thoughts. Such thoughts are causes planted in your self-nature, and they result in the manifestation of offenses and evil. But if your self-nature is pure, outwardly there will be no evil karmic retribution. Therefore, you may study the Buddha Dharma for several tens of thousands of great kalpas, but unless you understand the genuine doctrine, you won't get off of the revolving wheel. If you understand the essential message of the Buddha Dharma, however, you will know. Oh, it's simply a matter of purifying my mind and will. The Buddha Dharma teaches you to purify your mind and will. If you understand the Buddha Dharma, you can become enlightened. And once enlightened, you will never have unclean thoughts again. Why do people suffer? It is because of unclean thoughts. Why is there no suffering in the land of ultimate bliss? It is because the people there have no impure thoughts. Thus, they endure none of the sufferings but enjoy every bliss. As we recite Namo Amitabha Buddha, we each create and adorn our own land of ultimate bliss. We each accomplish our own land of ultimate bliss, which is certainly not hundreds of thousands of millions of Buddha lands from here. Although it is far away, it doesn't go beyond one thought. It is not hundreds of thousands of millions of Buddha lands from here. It is right in our hearts. The land of ultimate bliss is the original true heart, the true mind of every one of us. If you obtain this heart, you will be born in the land of ultimate bliss. If you don't understand your own original true heart, you will not. The land of ultimate bliss is within our hearts, not outside. This land is clear, pure, and undefiled, and so is that one thought of the mind and nature. It is just that now, as common people, we are defiled by attachments. If you can empty yourself of attachments, you will immediately see Amitabha Buddha, that is, the land of ultimate bliss. Amitabha Buddha and living beings, Do not discriminate between this and that, for the land of ultimate bliss is not so far away. In one thought, turn the light within. Know that originally you are the Buddha, and your original Buddhahood is just the land of ultimate bliss. For this reason, you should cast out your defiled thoughts, your lustful desires, your confusion, jealousy, contrariness, and selfish thoughts of personal gain. Be like the bodhisattvas who benefit everyone and enlighten all beings. Just that is the land of ultimate bliss. Don't you agree that the absence of confusion and false thoughts is the land of ultimate bliss? If it isn't, what is? Good knowing advisors, you are all ones of great wisdom and great intelligence. You are all more clever than I, and in the future you will explain the Dharma better than I do. But now, because you don't know Chinese, I am introducing you to this old-fashioned tradition. In the future, you will transform it and make it unspeakably wonderful. Sutra. Moreover, Shariputra, this land of ultimate bliss is everywhere surrounded by 7 tiers of railings, 7 layers of netting, and 7 rows of trees, all formed from the 4 treasures, and for this reason named ultimate bliss. Commentary. After explaining why this land is called ultimate bliss, Shakyamuni Buddha waited for Shariputra to ask about the limitless principles which remained. But as intelligent as he was, Shariputra simply didn't know enough to ask. Why? It was because the Pure Land Dharma Door is simply too wonderful. Unable to wait any longer, the Buddha said, Shariputra, I will tell you something else. In the most happy land, there are 7 railings which run horizontally like fences and are arranged vertically in 7 tiers. The railings represent the precepts. The netting represents concentration. And the trees represent wisdom. The number 7 is used for the 7 classes. The classification of the 37 wings of enlightenment into 7 groups. 1. The 4 applications of mindfulness. 2. The 4 right efforts. 3. The 4 bases of supernatural power. 4. The 5 roots. 5. The 5 powers. 6. The 7 limbs of enlightenment. 7. The proper eightfold path. How do the tiers of railings represent the precepts? Precepts prohibit evil and prevent error. Morality is simply all evil not done and all good conduct respectfully practiced. Once you have taken the precepts, you cannot entertain confused false thinking. You must purify your mind and will. If you find yourself caught up in false thinking, rub your head and say, I have left the home life. I am hairless. I am no longer a layman, and so I can't be casual and think unclean thoughts. I must stop. In this way, the precepts are like a fence. It is illegal to jump it. You have to go through the gate. Thus, the 7 tiers of railings represent the precepts. How do the 7 layers of netting represent concentration? One does not enter or emerge from true concentration. With naga concentration, you don't need to meditate because no external state will move your heart. You are always concentrated. Suppose you see something good to eat and think, not bad. I will try it out. This displays a lack of concentration power, to say nothing of stealing food, which is a violation of the precepts. Oh, a little thing like that is not important, you think. It's just because you transgress in minor ways that when something major comes along, you slip up. People who transgress in little matters will transgress even more easily in big ones. It may be a small matter, but it is just the small matters which are difficult to change. If you change your small faults, you have concentration power. Always in concentration, the eyes see forms outside, but inside there is nothing. The ears hear external sounds, but the mind does not know. Concentration is the state of being unmoved by situations. For example, when a woman sees a handsome man but has no thought of sexual desire, she is said to possess concentration power. When a man sees a beautiful woman but has no thoughts of sexual desire, that too is concentration. Seeing as if not seeing, and hearing as if not hearing. The eyes see forms outside, but inside there is nothing. The ears hear external sounds, but the mind does not know. The seven layers of netting represent concentration. Now do you understand the Amitabha Sutra? If you don't understand it completely, perhaps you understand a little. That's why I am explaining it. And seven rows of very tall trees. The trees represent wisdom. If you have wisdom, you are tall. Without it, you are short. It's not a question of how tall or short your body is. With wisdom, you are like seven rows of tall trees. Without wisdom, you are like seven rows of grass. The grass has smothered your heart, and you grow more and more stupid. All formed from the four treasures, and for this reason called ultimate bliss. The four treasures are gold, silver, lapis lazuli, and crystal. Is the land of ultimate bliss made out of only four treasures? You may wonder. The treasures in the land of ultimate bliss are limitless and measureless. Nothing in this world compares with them. We of this world have never seen anything like the treasures which fill that land. Then why do you only mention four? You ask. The four treasures represent the four virtues of nirvana. Permanence, bliss, true self, and purity. 1. Permanence. Amitabha Buddha's lifespan is limitless. Not only does Amitabha Buddha have a limitless lifespan, but when we are born in the land of ultimate bliss, we will too. If you would like to transcend death, seek rebirth in the Pure Land, because everyone there has a limitless life. This is the virtue of permanence. 2. Bliss. Those born in the Pure Land endure none of the sufferings, but enjoy every bliss. 3. True Self. In this land, the self has eight great freedoms, eight functions, eight kinds of strength, and eight spiritual penetrations. These are the eight kinds of wonderful functions and are called the eight great freedoms of the self. A. One body can manifest limitless bodies. If 100 people invite you to lunch, you can accept all their invitations and go to every Dharma protector's house to eat. One Dharma protector may say, "He came to lunch at my house on such and such a day." And another will say, "But he also had lunch at my house on that day." They don't know that you are able to respond to limitless offerings in a single day. B. One body the size of a mote of dust can completely fill the great thousand world systems. Isn't this wonderful? In one mote of dust, Buddha fields appear. In a Buddha field, motes of dust appear. One country becomes as small as a mote of dust, and one mote of dust becomes as large as a country. C. The great body can lightly float to a distant place. It can fly. The body is big and awkward, yet it can gently float far away. D. One manifests limitless kinds of living beings which always dwell in one land. We see mountains as mountains when actually they contain the palaces of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. You see mountains and oceans but do not see Buddhas and Bodhisattvas within them who are teaching the Dharma. A layman has mentioned such a place where there are many people cultivating the way. He can see it, and you can't. This is to cause limitless kinds of living beings to dwell in one place. E. All the organs are used interchangeably. The eyes can speak. The ears can see. The nose can eat. How can this happen? The six sense organs, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind are interchangeable. Each of them has the function of the other six. Sages who have given proof to the fruit may speak with bodhisattvas, but you wouldn't know it if they were talking with their ears. "I don't believe it," you say. Of course you don't. If you did, you would have this talent yourself, but because you don't believe, you don't have it. How can you obtain what you do not even believe? F. The suchness of all dharmas without the thought of dharmas obtained. Although the one who has realized true self obtains all dharmas, he has no thought of attainment. This is mentioned in the Heart Sutra as no wisdom and no attainment. G. The meaning of one verse may be explained throughout limitless eons. The meaning of a single line, a single word, cannot fully be explained even in limitless eons. Why? Because he has free and unobstructed eloquence, so that speaking in any place or in any dimension, he always rests in the way and speaks the Dharma. Speaking Dharma in Buddha fields and in motes of dust, any Dharma he selects contains limitless meanings. Having rightly attained the eight great freedoms, he does what he pleases and says what he likes. He can scold people, but they like to hear it. He scolds very well, they say. He may teach Dharma by doing nothing but scolding people, and yet they say it is very nice to hear. Why? Because he has attained the eight great freedoms of the self. Because he himself is free. When you hear him speak, you too feel free. H. The body pervades all places like space. One body fills Buddha fields in numbers as many as dust motes. But, like empty space, there is really nothing there. Although there is nothing there, it fills Buddha fields in numbers as many as dust motes. What doctrine is this? That of freedom, the eight great freedoms of the self. The sutra text below says, and throughout the clear morning, each living being of that land, with sacks full of the myriads of wonderful flowers, makes offerings to the hundreds of thousands of millions of Buddhas of the other directions. At mealtime, they return to their own country, and having eaten, they stroll around. They can do this because they have obtained the eight great freedoms of the self. 4. Purity. The last of the four virtues of nirvana is that of purity. This land is pure. It is adorned with the four treasures which represent the four virtues of nirvana in unobstructed interpenetration. Thus it is named Ultimate Bliss.